Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a voice from the past, a gentleman. Well, of course, he's been around ever since the past. But in 1964, John Stormer wrote a book that really was instrumental in creating the conservative movement here in the United States. It was called None Dare Call It Treason. And, of course, there were 7 million copies of that book that were put out. And, of course, it's an amazing story. And I wanted to talk to John about that book, about those days, because, you know, as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it. The other wag said those who, one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn anything from history. Well, I think we can learn from history, and I think we can learn a great deal from the wisdom of a man who wrote a book that really changed the entire complexion of politics here in the United States. John, thank you so much for being with us.
It's always a privilege.
Why don't you just tell our listeners just who do not know too much about your background how it happened that you actually wrote the book, None Dare Call It Treason.
Well, I guess my background was that while I grew up in a conservative home, I went off to college and I came out a liberal, and I was in that, or I thought I was a liberal, until I came home from the office in August of 1960, and my wife said, "Have you ever heard of a guy named Goldwater?" And I said, "Yeah, he's some sort of crackpot senator from out in New Mexico or Arizona." She said, "Well, I heard him from the Republican convention today, and I'm not so sure he's a crackpot." And I heard him that night and was astounded that this this crackpot conservative enunciated the principles and values that I tried to apply in my business and personal life, like you can't spend more than you take in and things like that. Only he said that worked for government, which I've never heard anything like that before. Don't hear it very often since. But I got fascinated and heard he had a book, got that, and he came to St. Louis a couple of weeks later and was here for 2 days, and I followed him around for those 2 days, and I bought in effect. I decided at that point I was going to get active in the Republican Party, and I was going to do what I could to get this man the nomination for president 4 years hence, 1964, and went through that election and learned how the political system worked, and found, surprisingly, or I guess it's not surprising, there are so few people who are active. If somebody comes in and wants to work, and maybe they have an agenda, that's how the communists have gotten all sorts of influence. Liberals get influence in different organizations. But I ended up one of the founders of the Goldwater for President movement, and we got 23 of the 24 delegates, and I was in the group that went to the Cow Palace in 1964. But in the meantime, I awakened to the threat of communism and got started to write that book.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. John Stormer. We're going to be talking about his book, None Dare Call It Treason, which was really one of the major turning points in the conservative movement in America. Of course, the book has been updated now. None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later. You'll find this a fascinating, fascinating read, because it's such an important part of history. We'll be back in just a moment with John Stormer. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is John Stormer, who wrote None Dare Call It Treason, a book which really was important as far as creating the conservative Christian movement here in America. Back in 1964, 7 million copies of that book went out, and the only notification it ever got or acknowledgement it ever got from the mass media was a vicious attack after 5 million copies had gone out, based upon nothing other than vilification and demonization of somebody who began talking back in 1964 about America's invisible government, the Council on Foreign Relations, which the American people were not to know about. Now, today, they acknowledge this as the most normal thing in the world, but back in those days, you would never see any mention of the Council on Foreign Relations in any of the major line media, because why? Because they controlled all the major line media, just as up until recently, you would never see any mention of the Bilderbergers, and then this year, they suddenly, just like somebody had given an order, they suddenly they began talking about the Bilderbergers as if it was the most normal thing in the world. How do they do that? They control the media. Well, John, you were telling us that you'd got started writing this book, None Dare Call It Treason. What was your motivation?
Well, I went through the 1960, got active in the Republican Party, and started to read a couple of conservative books. I read one on education, and I read Clarence Mannion's book, Key to Peace, and was looking around in the library, and somebody had left the little newsletter. It was a little newsletter in those days called Human Events, and they announced that they were going to have a political action conference in Washington, D.C. On the 3rd or 4th of January, by the time the new Congress came back, and it was a nonpartisan thing. The headliners were Barry Goldwater, who was a Republican, and Strom Thurmond, who was a Democrat. But the thing that really attracted me, they said that they were going to feature four young conservatives who had just been elected to Congress on solid conservative platforms from Democrat districts. And I was a young conservative in a Democrat district, and I thought, I'm going to go and find out how to do it. So I went to Washington. Incidentally, those four, John Russolo from California, John Ashbrook from Ohio, and Don Bruce from Indianapolis, and then a fellow named Garland from up in Maine. Three of the four went on and were solidly conservative. Garland, like some do, got elected on a conservative platform and then turned left. And
hold that thought for just a moment, John, please.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is John Stormer, and he's just saying that he decided to go to a meeting back in Washington, D.C., which were featuring speakers like Barry Goldwater, who was a Republican, and of course Strom Thurmond, who was a Democrat at that time, and this would be, in the early 1960s sometime, wasn't it?
Well, it was January of 1961.
All right.
I got up there and I called my wife on the second night. There were about 400 people there. It turned out that they developed into the core of the Goldwater for President movement. But I called my wife on the second night I was there, and I said, I'm with either the most respectable-looking and talking bunch of crackpots, or we're in real bad trouble.
And, of course, at that time, most people didn't understand that the communists controlled almost a third of the landmass and a quarter of the people on this earth. The communism was spreading. In fact, most of our policies...
That was just ensconced 90 miles off our shore.
Right.
But there were people on the platform, Fulton Lewis Jr., who was a very respected, well-known radio commentator, very conservative. Willard Edwards of the Chicago Tribune, and from the platform, they were making statements that the National Council of Churches was deeply influenced by the communists, that the National Education Association was influenced by the communists, and then Walter Judd, member of Congress from Minnesota, he'd actually been a medical missionary in China and saw the communist threat there, and came home and ran for Congress to try and do what he could do about it. And from the platform, he was speaking, and when it got to question time, there was a little lady from North Carolina who said, Dr. Judd, In 1956, Willis Brocker, the Secretary of the Army under Eisenhower, testified before Congress that the communications lines in and out of the Pentagon were serviced by a union that was so heavily dominated by the communists that it was kicked out of the CIO. And he said, yes, ma'am, that's correct. And she said, well, what's been done about it in the 4 years since? And he said, nothing. And this little lady said, why in the name of God hasn't something been done? And Dr. Judd went on and explained that there had been people, Martin Dies of the House Committee on Un-American Activities back in the late 30s and early 40s, Harold Velde, a former FBI man that got to Congress as a Republican, Joe McCarthy, Bill Jenner, the senator from Indiana, that they had tried, and every one of them were destroyed for trying to expose the threat of communism. And so Dr. Judd said at that time, those of us who are here who understand the problem decided we're not going on any more suicide missions until you people go to work and send some people up here to Congress that understand and are willing to support us.
And, of course, you know, it was 5 years later when Professor Quigley, who was a liberal college professor, came out with his book, Tragedy and Hope, and really spilled the beans. And that is, all these people thought that there were communists in government, and there were communists in government, and they were being allowed to stay there intentionally to, as a distraction, so that people wouldn't understand that the major force behind this was what he was writing about, and that was the Anglo-American establishment, which eventually became the Council on Foreign Relations, which controlled the leadership of both parties and the State Department and foreign policy. But back in 1964, we didn't understand that. At least I didn't understand it.
No, we were looking at the very real... Well, one of the questions that I raised in my book and as I started to research, at the end of World War II, the United States was the number one power, militarily, economically, every other way. And in the years between 1945 and 1960 or 61, we spent hundreds of billions of dollars for military defenses, other hundreds of billions for foreign aid to about 100 nations around the world, all justified as being necessary to stop the spread of communism. And, of course, we fought the war in Korea. I spent 3 years in the Air Force through that time. And after all of this effort put forth, the Soviet Union had become a military power about as strong as we were and had spread their tentacles around the world, as you said, controlled a third of the world's earth mass and 25% of the world's people. And I started to ask why. And I came to see that while we were with one hand preparing and spending money to fight communism, with the other hand we were building up the communist enemy that supposedly was our enemy.
And it really didn't make sense at that time. And, you know, you just felt so terribly uneasy. How could you explain that we would be financing our enemies until, of course, eventually you come to you have to have an enemy if you want to rally the people behind the leadership. And you go back and you read what Plato wrote in the Republic about when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or by treaty and there's nothing to fear, then he's always out there dwelling up or drumming up another enemy so he can rally the people behind him. And you even had one quotation I remember in your original book, None Dare Call It Treason, about some fellow from the CFR saying, you know, if there wasn't a communist threat, why we'd have to create one. So where's that effect? You remember that?
Yes, I remember. I don't remember anymore who it was said it, but that certainly was a view. But at that time, we just didn't... Dan Smoot had a book, The Invisible Government, in which he documented, Dan Smoot, former assistant to J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI, and a strong conservative, and he got a hold of the membership lists and so forth, and showed that every Secretary of State from the time of before World War II, from Eisenhower's time, Cordell Hull, and on, every Secretary of State was a member of the CFR, and other top officials, secretaries of the Treasury, and so forth. But, you know, at that point, some of us, as people started to wake up, became concerned about, and in fact, back in the earlier 50s, the cry went up, we have to clean out the State Department. And they were getting the blame or the credit, depending on which side you were, for all of these China falling to the communists, Cuba being placed in power by a basically State Department guy. And back in those days, the hue and cry was, we got to clean out the State Department. Now there's still a problem there, but we don't hear about it anymore.
Well, that's because it's under the control of the same people. The CFR controlled this even before the Second World War. They still control it today. I've been through their papers. They were planning the Second World War back in 1938. They were already planning on getting us into that war. Hitler hadn't even attacked Poland at that time, but that didn't matter. It was all laid out ahead of time. We needed a war because that's where we were going to change America and change the world, and boy, we sure did, didn't we?
Yes, tragically, and it's not been for good. Then, of course, I wrote the book, and people have said, how'd you get all those billions out? How did you penetrate the paper curtain? There had been other good John Flynn's books. There were others. Brighton Barron had a book inside the State Department. And there were two publishers, Regnery, that put out a few little books, and Devin Adair, Devin Garrity, who was a real patriot. And they'd turn out some books and sell a couple of thousand copies. They couldn't get distribution. And then I was an editor of an electrical magazine, so I knew something about the printing business. And as I got involved in the anti-communist business, I'd find a book, and I'd decide I want to get some of them. Fred Schwartz's book, You Can Trust the Communists to Be Communists, or Barry Goldwater's book, Conscience of a Conservative. Incidentally, that book ended up selling about 3 million copies. There wasn't a major publisher that was willing to publish that book. And Dean Clarence Mannion, the dean of the Notre Dame Law School, of course, Goldwater didn't write it, Brent Mozell wrote it, but they tried to get it published, couldn't, and Dean Mannion prevailed on a fellow that had a little printing plant down in Tennessee somewhere. And they turned out the first copies, and then it became a runaway bestseller. But the way the book distribution business is set up, then and now, nothing wrong with it, a book distributor can order 1,000 or 5,000 copies or 100 or whatever, and not even put them out. He lets them sit in his warehouse for a year, tears all the covers off, and sends them back and gets all his money back. And we know that here in St. Louis, for example, that happened with Fred Schwartz's book. They ordered 5,000 of them because people were putting some pressure on it and said, you got to get this book out. They never made the bookstores. Well, there's a real big profit margin there, or a good markup there. So I decided that what I'd do during the 3 years I was writing the book and being active in conservative groups, and I met people around the country who were organizing study groups and that sort of stuff. And I collected names. I collected names of about 125 people who were activists. And once I finished the book, I mimeographed the manuscript and sent it out to those 125 people and said, if we can get enough of advance orders to print 100,000 copies, you can buy 1,000 copies for $180. And 87 of those people placed orders for 55,000 books. That gave us the money to print the first 100,000, and it went from there.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with John Stormer, a book that sold 7 million copies and changed America forever.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. 9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is John Stormer, who wrote None Dare Call It Treason, and we carry his book, None Dare Call It Treason. We carry his book, None Dare Call It Treason 25 Years After. We carry his book, None Dare Call It Education, and we carry 3 videos that he's done. One is, What Are the Dead Communists Doing Now? One deals with the background of our Constitution and Declaration of Independence, and the third one deals with education. What are the names of those 2 others, John?
Well, the book on education, The War Against Our Culture Through the Schools, and the other one is The Biblical Basis for the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
And they're all available by for the Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Later we'll tell you how to get in touch with John, who doesn't have a website, but you can always write to him, and he has a lot of other things that you will find very, very beneficial. Well, anyway, you were able to get enough money to print the first 100,000 copies of your book, and then, of course, you didn't have a distributor. You were putting them out, and as time went by, you kept putting out more and more, and this, you put out 5 million copies without a word in the controlled media about, and then what happened? Suddenly you began to get some notoriety, didn't you?
Right. As you said, 5 million copies, and those were distributed because I guess I was the first one to put a coupon in the back of the book listing the quantity prices so that anybody that bought could buy. That's one of the reasons people asked, didn't the bookstores sell it? Probably less than 1% of the millions of books we sold went through bookstores. To some extent, the channels were controlled by the other side. But then, on the other hand, if you go to the coupon in the back, anybody could buy the books cheaper than a bookstore could buy them if they just bought a couple of them. So there were two factors involved there. But along about September, the book came out in February, and in September, and up till then, it had no notice at all. Jesse Helms, a TV commentator down in Raleigh, North Carolina, had written a real strong endorsement for the book. Bill Loeb, but the Manchester Union leader up in New Hampshire, had approved the book in their little newspaper. And the New York Daily News, the at that point the biggest circulation paper in the country, in July had run a lead editorial saying people won't like this, but it's pretty well documented, and it's saying some things that haven't been said and should be said. But outside of that, it was a total blackout. And then in September, a little group up in Cleveland, Ohio, called the National Committee for Civic Responsibility. Boy, that sounds good. It was actually 5 people, including the vice chairman of the Democrat Party in Cleveland. And they met in a Unitarian church that had hosted Gus Hall, the head of the Communist Party, in speeches and so forth. And they put out this little report in which they raised questions about 10 of the 890-some footnotes in None Dare Call It Treason, and said it was a fraud and deceit and so forth. And the sort of things that they raised questions about, we had a story that actually the CIO was, and the labor movement was quite proud of it, they kicked a union out of the CIO that was communist controlled. And my reference on that was page such and such in the Congressional Record. And that's where the story started. But the actual statement that I quoted was on the next page in the continuation of the story. And they made a big deal that way, that nothing on the page that I quoted said anything like the document. And they went through some things like that, and in some cases they simply denied the. For example, we quoted Arthur Schlesinger Jr., who said the way that we're going to achieve socialism would be to give the American people and the world steady doses of little bits and pieces until we come to a socialist state. And we quoted Arthur Lasky and Harold Lasky and some others, and Stalin, that might work. And they said, oh, this just didn't happen. And they found one quote in a 4-page article where Schlesinger seemed to say something against socialism. They said that proves he was misusing it.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with John Stormer. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But this is such an important part of the history of our nation.
very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a few weeks ago, Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial contacted us and asked if he could sponsor some of our programs. Well, I looked into the background of the company. They have an excellent reputation, so I think it's a good time to think very seriously about investing in precious metals. Why? Because we have inflation, we have a progressively devalued dollar, that we've lost almost 30-40% of our value of our currency, and we know that people like Warren Buffett are investing overseas. They're not investing in American currencies. Why not give the people at Lear Financial a call at 1-888-302-7111, that's 1-888-302-7111, and ask for their free audio seminar. Again, the number 1-888-302-7111. I think this is an excellent time to consider protecting your assets.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And we'll be back in just a moment here with John Stormer. All right, well, I guess this afternoon is John Stormer, and we're talking about how, of course, in 1964, his book was put out. He did this on his own. He got it printed. He mailed it out of his living room and garage, and they put out 5 million copies of this book. And then suddenly, the people on the other side come up with a little pamphlet. Part of it is Frank Lies, but then what would you expect? Because he is exposing this whole fraud of socialism. Socialism is really something that's pushed by people of great wealth to centralize power in their hands, and most socialists have no idea they're being used. They think that they're fighting the people of great wealth, whereas actually most of them are simply carrying out their programs. We do have dedicated communists here, without realizing that the world communist movement has been funded in large part by American taxpayer dollars through our own government, our own State Department, and nothing as it appears as it is. And John is raising all of these questions, and so suddenly these scurrilous reports begin circulating across America, and I can remember somebody coming to me and showing me that and snickering and saying, oh, look how inaccurate this book is. But of course, John, really there was nothing there in any of those criticisms that were valid, were there?
No, there weren't. In fact, I've frequently been asked, I was not a Christian when I wrote the book from a Bible sense of the word, and since the Lord has saved me, people have said, is there anything that you would change in that book? And I think in the whole book, the only thing that I might change would be a definition of neo-orthodoxy in the theological field. And it wasn't wrong, but it just didn't pin it down quite enough.
Okay. And for our listeners, of course, John then became a minister, and he's practiced. He's been a practicing minister until recently, and now he's retired and busier than ever, going all across the country giving talks. And he gives a talk or a lecture or a Bible study every week to when the legislation's at session back there in Missouri, and he has maybe 20 or 30 people from the state legislature there every year, learning about the Lord and their civic responsibility as elected representatives. But what happened then after they came out with their scurrilous attack, because they had to discredit you? Why, Americans were beginning to wake up and realize there was a threat of communism. They didn't understand how it fit together. They didn't understand, in many respects, it was the best enemy that our State Department could create. But, you know, then what did they do then? Next, I understand the Christian Science Monitor came out with the attack.
About 10 days after this report was initially circulated, the Christian Science Monitor picked it up and published some excerpts from it. And a Christian scientist, a fellow up in Michigan, who was distributing the book, went out and got the original documentation and showed that they were just totally off base. And he wrote to Erwin Canham, the editor of the Monitor, who was a CFR member, and explained to him about the terrible mistakes in their paper. And Canham wrote back and had some excuses that they tried to check, but the books were out of the library. And he said, even so, it's a bad book, and so we're not going to be changing anything about it. It's kind of like this thing that Dan Rather is doing now, that's saying, well, yeah, the stuff we were using was a forgery, but it's still what we were saying, just from the other side, the twisted thing. But once the Monitor ran that story, within 10 days, the name Stormer was in headlines all across the country, along with deceit and fraud and all that kind of stuff. Out there in California, in San Diego, Kogo TV, big TV station, they ran for 4 or 5 nights in a row on their main news program, using this faulty documentation, this faulty charges. And then, in the interest of fairness, they let me know, they contacted me and said, now, if you'll come out here at your own expense and face a panel of 4 people who will question you. I said, no thank you. But we got the Kogo tapes and put together a full page ad for the San Diego Union, refuting and answering each one of them. And we sent it out, and the paper said, well, this is too controversial. We won't take your ad.
That's what's known as freedom of the press.
Right.
All right, Brian, we've got Daryl calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Daryl. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. And I had to call in again because John Stormer was born in Altoona, Pennsylvania, just a stone's throw from where I live. And I have his books, the 3 books that you offer, None Dare Call It Treason, None Dare Call It Treason 25 Years Later, and None Dare Call It Education. And I would urge everyone to get those books. They're great books offered by Radio Liberty. And certainly Senator Joe McCarthy, if anything, underestimated the communist infiltration in the State Department and other areas. And after I jump off, maybe John could talk a little bit more about that. For McCarthy certainly has been vindicated by current releases by various intelligence agencies around the world. And Dr. Stan, could I say just one quick word about 3 other great books you offer?
All right, fine.
The Medusa File by Lieutenant Colonel Craig Roberts, that shows a lot of government secrets and cover-ups, explains them. Into the Buzzsaw by Christina, or edited by Christina Borgeson, that certainly destroys the myth of a free press in the United States. And of course, your book, Dr. Stan, Brotherhood of Darkness, that shows the tremendous influence of secret societies, even today in various Western nations. So, I just want to say God bless you both, and thanks for the great guests you always have on, Dr. Stan.
All right. Well, thank you, Daryl. Appreciate
thank
your call.
You.
Okay. And, of course, now, of course, 7 million copies of this book was put out, and, of course, you didn't get rich off of that at all. You know, you were just trying to get the word.
Not when you're selling books for 15 or 18 cents a piece.
Right. And even if we're all profits, you still wouldn't make that much money. But right. You weren't doing this. You were trying to awaken the American people. And between your book and Phyllis Schlafly's book, A Choice Not an Echo, suddenly the conservative movement was born. A couple of years later, Ronald Reagan is elected governor of California. And eventually, of course, he becomes the President of the United States, and a lot of us thought, oh, everything's going to be fine, you know, now we've got a conservative in the White House, but unfortunately the CFR, the International Socialist Movement, was there even then, wasn't it?
Yes, and if you go back, you look at when Reagan was nominated in Detroit, as I recall, the Republican convention was in 1980, Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford went in and met with Reagan, and I personally believe they said to him, now look, you know what we did to Goldwater when he got the nomination, and we destroyed him. If you want to be President of the United States, here's going to be the price. You're going to have to name George Bush as your vice president. Bush had trashed Reagan through that campaign, called his economic proposals as I forget what the term was.
Voodoo economics.
Voodoo economics, that's right. And they came out and announced that Bush would be the vice president. And Reagan, of course, was elected overwhelmingly. But as the cabinet was formed, well, our friend Howard Phillips said one time that when Bush himself was elected president, we're starting the third Bush term back then.
Right. And I think people really don't understand that George Bush really ran things in the White House, especially after the son of a very close friend of George Bush just happened to try to kill Ronald Reagan.
And if you looked at the Reagan cabinet, now Reagan himself, he picked Judge Clark from California, a longtime friend. Watts was named the Secretary of Interior.
And they sure went after him, didn't they?
They went after him.
Allen, remember Allen that he brought along with him? And
Ray Allen. They got him almost immediately because he'd taken a watch from some Japanese. And then Gene Kirkpatrick. Now, Reagan had never met Kirkpatrick, but he'd read some things that she had written, and he said, I want this woman.
That was
interesting. Well, within 4 years, they were the four Reaganites, the four real Reaganites in that administration. Of course, Don Hodell was there under Watt, came in and then did continue. But within 4 years' time, all of those four Reaganites were gone. Ed Meese was there, but Baker... Jim Baker ended up really kind of running things, and big CFR man,
and
big Rockefeller family man.
Right, and really, of course, they almost sent Meese off to prison, too. So they were really lined up.
They really tried.
Right, and so there's really a ruthless treatment of anybody who stood up to the establishment and to George Bush, because he was really running things.
Now, I detail those things in the book, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later. In fact, we have the story that Jean Kirkpatrick herself told that at just before the first term ended, someone came up to Jean Kirkpatrick at a social affair and said, "Now you have to know that if the president has the opportunity to make peace with the Soviets, you're going to have to go." She said, I was amazed. What does this guy have to say about it, you know? But it happened.
Sure. But, of course, I think people have to understand that the president really, in many respects, is a figurehead for the power elite who really control the leadership of both political parties. And Ronald Reagan was only allowed to do a few things on his own, and so much of this was all determined for him. I mean, actually, this was the biggest spending we've ever had prior to George W. Bush. I mean,
in fact... Judge Clark, who was a Reagan friend from California, and a loyal Reaganite, I was in a meeting where he told how they got the evil empire statement that Reagan got famous over into a speech. He said they regularly put that evil empire label in speeches, and every presidential speech has to be cleared by the State Department. It always came back redlined. And Reagan was speaking to the National Association of Evangelicals, and they put a bunch of religious stuff in, and I'm not doubting that, you know, but in other words, it was the speech was directed towards those group of conservative evangelicals, and apparently it went to the State Department, and somebody over there didn't like all that religious stuff and said, well, this isn't a very important speech. They never got down to the place where the evil empire remark was there.
And so that's how, of course, the phrase got put out there.
That's right.
And really, truly, it was an evil empire. But, of course, what people have forgotten is that we started financing the United States and our corporations and our Federal Reserve System, started financing the evil empire back in 1918. I covered that in my book, and I know John goes into a lot of that in his book as well. People have to understand it was the finest evil empire that American money could buy. Well, John,
Anthony Sutton had that great book. What was the title?
The Best Enemies That Money Can Buy.
Best Enemies Money Can Buy, right. That's right.
And in fact, we even have an interview with him, with Professor Sutton, that we did before he passed away in 19... it's titled The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. So you can get both the book and the video from our ministry, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, went into how we financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. I mean, after all, how could we possibly keep the war going if we weren't financing the enemy? And, you know, because how could this little tiny country the size of the state of Mississippi fight the greatest nation in the world for 10 years and win the war if we were really trying to win? And
well, that's again brought up. I'm trying to sell some of those under call of treason 25 years later for you, Dr. Stan.
Well, you go ahead and get a good push for that book, because I think it's a great book.
But
tell us what's
in
that book.
We make the point in the chapter on Vietnam, that 85% of all the guns and bullets and planes and rockets that were used to kill American boys in Vietnam came from industrial plants in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union that were built with American machine tools. And, you know, you'd see those things and ask, why?
Well, unless, of course, nothing is as it appears to be. Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How you doing?
Very good. I just happened to look here at something, and there's a quote from Johann von Goethe, a famous German writer, who wrote in 1742, "None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free."
All right.
So, and then I'd like to ask Mr. Stormer if he sees any hope, and I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, John. Herman wants to know, is there any hope?
Humanly speaking, and I'm asked this question across the country, and I always say, humanly speaking, no. If you look at the forces that are aligned against us and the degree of control, but there is a verse that has kept me going now for almost 25 years. It's in Isaiah 59:19. If you have a King James Version, all the other versions, it's been garbled. Isaiah 59:19 says, "When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against them." And I have spent a lot of time and spent a lot of effort. I decided I wanted to be a part of that standard, and the enemy has come in like a flood. And God's Word says that when it does, He's going to lift up a standard against it. And I believe that that standard is a triune standard, godly families, power-endued churches, and together they can influence righteous government and expose the evil that's going on. And so I just keep after it. And really, when you look at the forces that are aligned against us and the various conspiratorial forces that we discuss in None Dare Call It Treason in that chapter, Why Are Our Leaders Betraying Us, I think that the only reason why we haven't been totally taken over openly for a good many years is that there is some struggle going on between these different forces. They're all working towards world government, believing that ultimately they will be the ones to control it.
But, of course, there is a conflict within them as to who's going to be at the very lead.
That's right.
And, of course, I'm sure you recognize the part that Satan plays in energizing this exactly. whole movement towards the New World Order and the New World Religion.
That's right. And in the book, Don Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later, we do have that chapter, and we detail seven different conspiratorial forces that are at work, and then we make the point, as you do, that Satan is controlling them all.
And until I think we begin to recognize that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, why, we're not going to be able to address it. And of course, things do sometimes seem hopeless, but the final analysis, if we're on God's side, why, we're on the winning side. John Stormer, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
It's been good to be with you.
Good night. God bless.
We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blackout across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Well, Dr. Stan here, and probably one of the most insightful videos we have is called Cover Up in Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, What Really Happened, is no longer available, but Cover Up in Oklahoma City is, and actually it's film footage that was shot right there in Oklahoma City immediately after the attack and blacked out across America. And of course you'll find that they talk about the second and third and fourth bombs in the interview with people who were in the building. And of course the building began to shake, and this one man jumped underneath the desk, and then the explosion blew in the windows from outside. There were obviously several buildings. We know that Timothy McVeigh told his sister and wrote to his sister Jennifer and said, I am part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. And you'll find that statement made in Stephen Jones' second book, The Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy. Others Unknown, I think is the title. Others Unknown, The Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy. Anybody who wants the pages, we'll get them for them. The interesting thing is that Stephen Jones opened his defense with that statement. The prosecution didn't address it. The media totally blacked out that fact. Does that put maybe a different opinion on what really happened? That if Timothy McVeigh claimed, told his sister, I am part of a special forces unit. Maybe that might explain a lot of the strange things that go on today, that there are these special forces units and they are involved in illegal activity. Was this an agent provocateur? We know that there was an Iraqi connection. We know that Terry Nichols went over to the Philippines and was meeting with Ramzi Yousef, the mastermind behind both World Trade Center bombings. Totally blacked out by the media. If you want the documentation, we can get it for you. The government knows these things, but the American people don't. And the question is, why won't they tell them? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with John Stormer. And Herman called in and asked, you know, is there any hope? Well, the other side controls the money of the world. They control the media. They control the great tax-exempt foundations, most of the great corporations, the education, and of course, all we have on our side. Well, as long as we're on the Lord's side, I would far rather be there than on the other side, because this is truly a spiritual battle that we're involved in. And once you understand that, why, you'll be able to sustain yourself day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, because we're in the long haul. There is no place to go and hide. Our job is to do our best and be true to the Lord and look to Him for our help and for our protection. So if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get that. You need to read it. And then, of course, you need to reread it and listen to the audio tape or listen to the, watch the video, and you can get them all together at the Brotherhood of Darkness special. It will give you the information you need to get. And if you buy them in large numbers, you can get the price way down as far as the book is concerned. And we want you to get that book and get it out as far and wide as you can, because it will help you to really understand what's going on today. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You can get my first book, The AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. You can get the book we've kept in print for many years. Actually, it was printed by Mr. Geraghty, Devin Geraghty of Devin Adair Publishing House. I talked to Mr. Geraghty. He told me that he wasn't able to get this book out across America at all. He published it initially. It was written by the Council for the Reese Commission. It was the story of the congressional investigation of the great foundations, Rockefeller and Ford and Carnegie, and they found they were pushing communism and socialism. And but you know why none of the major distributors would take the book, and he couldn't get it out at all, so we gave the plates away to a Mr. Morrison, and Mr. Morrison gave me the plates, and we put our money out, and we reprinted that book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. One of the five most important books in my library, a book that truly changed my life many years ago. And it's available, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, by calling 1-800-544-8927. Until you understand the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation funded communism and socialism and helped to bring communism to China, you can't understand anything going on today, because nothing really makes sense. And once you understand that, everything begins to make sense. We also have that long suppressed book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We have a 4-tape set on the secret government, an interview with Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor. Or we have actually the secret government special, which includes the 4-tape set on the secret government, the 4-tape set on secret societies, my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and so much information that will help you to understand the true nature of the demonic forces which are working in the world today to destroy Christendom, because this is what it's all about. It's a war against Christianity, and it's a war against God's people here on earth. And the trouble is that most Christians don't even understand there's a war going on. So our job is to educate them, and your job is to help us. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you might even look at the various things we have. Now you're looking for Christmas presents. We have a lot of Sanjian electronic products. We carry all of the big Berkey products, and if you get them through us, why, you get a major Berkey, a big Berkey, or Berkey Light. You get a free video or 4-tape set that we've produced. Then remember, again, that's radioliberty.com, the website where you can listen to us 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly, and not get a thing accomplished, but you'll sure get a lot of information. And then remember the all-day program we're going to have here in the Monterey Bay on the 6th of November. It's going to start early in the morning. Lunch will be served. Go to late in the afternoon. We're bringing in outside speakers, and we hope you can come. Remember the number, 1-800-544-8927. Saturday, November the 6th, and then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back again. May the Lord be with you.